Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the second series of Humans of Excess Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week we're going to be celebrating the spirit of Manchester by speaking to somebody who's helped shape the city or has been influenced by the city. This week I'm joined by Coronation Street star Jenny McAlpine. She's going to tell us about playing such an iconic role on the soap.
I answer to Fizz, so if people say I have Fizz to me, I've just been Fizz for so long.
And Jenny will describe how tough I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here really is.
First night was horrendous. Horrendous. I didn't sleep at all.
It's a great pleasure to welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester an actress who, in recent years, has won the hearts of millions of sitcom lovers with the portrayal of Fizz Brown in Coronation Street. Before that, she was destined for a while to become a comedian, a stand-up comedian, and more recently she's entered into the restaurant business. Jenny McAlpine, welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester.
Hello, thank you. It's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you as
well. Studio, isn't it?
It's lovely, isn't it? Built it myself.
I can see. It's lovely. I love what you've done with it. I love the colour scheme. Very minimalistic. I like it.
We like it. Yeah. Looks good, doesn't it? That introduction, it sounds like you've got a lot of apps on. And on top of all that, you've just had a new baby as well, haven't you?
Yeah. So I'd forgot. I'm glad you've got, you know, what I've been doing for the last 17 years because I've now forgotten because I've got a baby brain. My brain is just totally frazzled. And can I just tell you that this is technically the first time that I've left the baby.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you should be honoured or scared, but
no, we're flattered.
So she's 4 months now,
right.
Hilda.
Yeah.
And she is with her daddy. But I just it feels like yesterday that she arrived. My little boy Albert, that went fast, but this has just gone. I can't even tell you. Anyway, I don't need to go on about how fast it's gone for the whole podcast, but my point is, what was my point? I've forgotten it.
You've got baby brain.
That's it. You know. Yeah. There
that,
we go.
And that's
got baby
coming
brain.
Across. That's coming across really
is
well.
It? Is
no,
it?
No, baby Hilda is 5 months old.
Yeah, 4 months old.
Four months old.
Yeah.
And Albert is 4 years old.
He's 4 years old, yeah.
And alongside all that, you're still a busy...
That's what you were saying, that I'm busy. That was the point. You said, I'm busy. I've got all these things. I've been in Corrie for 17 years. Got our restaurant. Do you know what? What it is I've got like a brilliant team behind me. At home, I think that's the trick, isn't
yeah,
it?
Absolutely.
So at home, my hubby and family and friends and brilliant neighbours, that just without them, I wouldn't be able to survive and do what I do. And then with the restaurant in Annie's, we've got people, a brilliant team around us. And Corrie, you know, is obviously, well, you know what Corrie is. That's an amazing team, amazing family that... Yeah. I'm still on the WhatsApp group. So we've got a Corrie WhatsApp group. So I'm still, even though I'm not there, I'm still very much getting all the gossip and the info and the intel.
Brilliant.
So I feel still there.
We've got loads to talk about. We're going to go through all that bit by bit. But I want to start by talking about your youth, your childhood. You were born in Bury, were you?
I was born in Bury. I was.
1984.
Yeah. In 1984.
Where were you born? What hospital or Ormbeth?
I was born in Fairfield Hospital, which isn't there anymore, the maternity unit. So it's one of the ones that's gone, I believe.
Yeah.
And then I went to school. I did my very first theatre job when I was a little kid at the Met Theatre in Bury, which is now, again, like your studio, really trendy looking. It wasn't when I was little. It was lovely, but it wasn't trendy. They've smartened it all up now. Yeah, so that was... when I was at school, and I went to Bury Parish Players. We did a pantomime there, pantomime or two.
And is that the one where your dad was in it as well?
My dad was in it as well, yeah. Yeah, he wasn't supposed to be in it. He came with me to the audition. And, you know, he was a pretty charismatic guy. And so basically there was nobody else there. He read the part of the day, and while they were waiting for somebody to put their hand up and say, I'll do it.
Right.
And he was better than anyone could have ever been.
So he jibbed in.
Well, he basically jibbed in, but he wasn't supposed to. I was supposed to be the star, but he ended up being... I was a fairy. I had a very small part, but what they say is there's no such thing as small parts, only small actors. But I'm also quite small, so I don't know, maybe that's...
Small but easy to spot.
That's it. I am that. I'm definitely that.
We were just talking before because you've got your famous, your bright red hair. Is that because of your Scottish ancestry?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. Well, I've got Scottish and Irish, so I'm totally Celtic. So my granddad's half the family, the McAlpine, is Scottish, and my nana, my dad's mum, was Irish. So pretty much I haven't got an English bone in my body, really.
Do you reckon your red hair has been an asset in getting acting parts over the years?
I don't know, really. I mean, I remember when I went to the job at Corrie. I mean, I went to a few auditions like this, to be honest, but it was just another one of those auditions that I went to. But just particularly, there was loads of girls with brown, straight hair. And then there was me with this red curly hair. So I came out and said to my agent, I think you sent me to the wrong audition again, because all these girls, they didn't look like me. And then when I got the part, it was like, oh, that's weird. I was the only one who looked like me in there. So I suppose it was an advantage at that point. But for all the other auditions, it wasn't.
Right. How'd you get on at school? Were you a clever kid or were you a bit of a precocious one?
I think I might have been both.
I had a feeling you might be the latter.
Yeah, I think I was. Well, I mean, I did okay. I did do okay. I got good results. And I was at college doing my A-levels when I got the part of Corrie. Well, I was doing my A-levels and working in Boots, the chemist. And then got 4 episodes of Corrie. And then 17 and a bit, nearly 18 years later now, I've not stopped going there, apart from when I've had 2 babies. So I was doing my A-levels. But yeah, I was a bit, I suppose I'm not very good at rules. Not rules that I don't understand why they're there. There was a particular rule in school that we weren't allowed to walk through our main entrance, the foyer, because it was like beautifully carpeted and there was the headmaster's office was off there and someone else's office was off there. I never understood why, because for some parts of the day it was easier for me to go through the main entrance then go round in the pee and rain round the playground to get from like my registration to my first science lesson. So I used to just go through every time and get told off for it. And that actually, one time, she was the deputy head and she said to me, we might be getting visitors, that's why. And I said, what? And they don't want to see any school children in a school. So yeah, I think I probably was, and I think I got detention for that.
So during those school years, I assume you were probably all singing, all dancing, weren't you? Even as a kid, were you?
I went to various drama places, and then I went to the Carol Godby Theatre Workshop is where I went, and I loved it there. I met lots of friends there, some who've gone on to become actors, some who haven't. Because actually I say that now when people say to me, where shall I send my kid to drama school, you know, a drama club? But I say, don't send them to try and get them to be an actor. Just send them because they'll enjoy it, and maybe it might bring out a bit of confidence, or they might meet some friends. But don't send them for that reason, because it's not the right reason and it won't happen, you know. So most of my mates who I'm in touch with that went there, they're various things. They're teachers, they're lawyers, they've gone travelling, they're mothers. They're not all actors. I did used to do singing and dancing in my back garden, and I did charge for it. So I was quite business savvy from an early age.
How much was
it? I think it was only 50p. But in 1990, right. And we did when we did Bananarama, we did, what's that song? Wigwam Bam Gonna Make You My Man.
Yeah. The sweet. Yeah.
There we go. We did that one.
Early 1970s pop
classic.
Waiting
for a star to fall.
Yeah, Boy Meets Girl.
That one. I could do the dance routine, but it's not right on a podcast. So I think it was 50p, and we'd put the chairs out in the garden, and we'd perform that to the neighbours. So yeah, I suppose I was a bit showy offy when I think.
You got support though, didn't you, from your family? I mean, your dad particularly was supportive.
Yeah, he was. My dad was a brilliant support, and he took me, as I said, to go and audition for my first pantomime, and ended up in the show with me. And then he took me to the theatre workshop and would always kind of take me everywhere. He did see that maybe I might be more that I wasn't really very good at anything else, so it was the only thing that I looked like I might do okay at.
We dabbled in comedy, didn't you, early on? So you were 13 when you entered.
That's what I wanted to do. And I entered, there was various competitions, but there was a Young Comedian of the Year competition, which I entered, and then the finals were at the Comedy Store in London. So it was quite big. I was 13 with lots of other young people playing the Comedy Store. A few have gone on to be pretty successful. But when you're 13, you kind of, it's not really scary, you know. Yeah, and I was trying to do, that's what I was trying to do. And that's kind of what I was doing. Then I was auditioning, I was working in Boots, I was doing my A-levels. And then I went for the audition for Corrie, like I said, and I'm still there. So I've still got the ambition to be a comedian, but oh my God, I wouldn't do it now, even though, no. It feels so scary as a grown-up to do that. And I think women, it's really difficult still. And I think comedians, and I know lots of them, and lots of them are my great friends, but are pretty tricky people to be around, actually. I mean, my mates, they probably will be listening, but my mates who are comics who, if I go for a brew with them, that's all right. But when you're with like a group of comics, when I have done shows, like chat shows where there's a few of them there, and when they're on their game and trying to be funny, yeah, they're hard work.
Hard to keep up with.
They're hard to keep up with, and they're hard work, and they're not, and they take the job of being funny really seriously. So they're not actually that fun. Sorry, all my friends.
I think everybody knows it. Anyway, watch
you know what I mean?
See something like Jim Carrey in his public guise when he's on a talk show, and then see him when he's not in the public eye, and how different the two characters are, and
I
how
think
sensitive
it's that.
He is, and.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You see, like, Steve Coogan is, if you meet him in real life, he's not the person that he is when he's in character. He's he's quite shy almost.
So for all those reasons, I wouldn't, and just kind of, I wouldn't want to do it. I'm so glad I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Have you seen the film Maxine Peake made recently, Funny Cow? The one about the...
I've not seen it, but I need to see
incredible.
It. Yeah, I need to.
It's based around a female comedian in the 1970s, it starts. But it's just one of the most shockingly brilliant films I've ever watched. It's incredible. You
and that's
it.
Kind of about that, about her trying to...
It's the same.
I mean, in the 70s, trying to make it, it was almost impossible.
It's in some parts, it's brutal. It's like just... I've never watched a film like it. It's incredible.
No, I do. It's on my list.
You did Emmerdale before you did Corrie, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did. And also, I auditioned for Hollyoaks. So if I'd have been in Hollyoaks, I don't know if I'd been some kind of Guinness Book of Records for being in the most soaps, certainly all the Northern soaps. I auditioned for Hollyoaks right at the beginning. It's a very different show now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd get in it now, but, well, I didn't get in it then, so maybe that's why.
And it wasn't baby brain, was it, back then?
No, it wasn't. No, it was pure, yeah.
Well, fortunately, when you were 17, you got the call to do the Corrie audition for Fizz, and you got it. And it was like just a few episodes to start, wasn't it? Five episodes or something?
Yeah, it was. Four episodes. Well, I think it was, well, four or five. And, yeah, to be Roy and Hayley's foster daughter. And it was part of their big storyline. So it was just, it wasn't really about me. You know, it was about them. Mm. And they were fostering various kids, and I was one of them. And I was just going to come in and go and never to be seen again. But yeah, as happens with Corrie, I think brilliantly, with so many amazing characters that have come, they're there for a bit, and then the writers see something. Not that I'm putting myself in the amazing character.
But it's a standout character, isn't it? It's a standout character.
Even, I don't know. I think
even people that don't watch Corrie, know who Fizz is.
Yeah.
I'm not a regular viewer. Yeah. I've not watched it for a long time, but I've always known who you are.
Yeah.
In fact, when you started, I remember you talked about being working in Boots. I remember a period when you were Fizz off Corrie and you were still working in Boots.
Yeah.
And people were saying, she's still working in Boots. Like, give up. And you walked through and you were there. You'd be working in it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Because, well, I was only doing a few episodes. And it was David and Julie, who play Roy and Hayley, or in Julie's case, played. We miss her so much still. They said to me, oh, you'll be back. And I was like, no, I won't be back. I know that now because I see young people come in and I say that to them, you'll be back, you know, and they say, no. I say, no, you will. You can probably hand your notice in Boots because I reckon they'll have you back. And it was lovely to be back and called back to be one of Mike Baldwin's factory girls. And even though I've been sacked quite a few times from the factory for various reasons, firstly was I did a rooftop protest in my underwear and took the said underwear off. So that was the first time I was sacked, and various reasons. We've all been sacked over the years, but I'm still kind of there.
I was a fan back then. Did you take it? Was it a gradual thing? So you got used to it over the space of a couple of years, or did it ever just hit you like, I'm famous?
It's
what I always wanted.
It was more gradual than it would be now. I mean, I think for people now, it's so instant, isn't it, with social media and everything, you know, and the way Corrie works, you know, that the photo of the new character will be on the social media, will be here before they're even on the screen. So there's so I think now it would hit you, so it kind of did, but again it was gradual, and because I'd just done the four episodes and then I went away and came back. And I quite like chatting to people. So I answer to Fizz. So if people say hiya Fizz to me, I've just been Fizz for so long that I don't really mind. I've been Fizz for as long as I wasn't Fizz, because I was 17 when I joined, and I've been there over 17 years. So I've been Fizz for longer than I wasn't.
Yeah.
So and you're just kind of used to it. But like I say, I think it would be much more difficult for people.
Let me talk about the fact that it's 18 years now since you started playing Fizz on a weekly basis, so you're probably doing it almost on a daily basis. You're having to step into that character. It's quite unique, isn't it, compared to even most household name actors and actresses from around the world haven't been through that sort of experience where you're playing one character for so long. When you make a movie, you might study the script for a year and act it out and then film it for 3 or 4 months and it's finished. You're living that character day in, day out, alongside your daily life. Does that not do your head in?
Well,
does it do your husband's head in?
Well, I think because I was so young, I haven't known much different. Because I think for some actors who come in and they've done lots of films, done lots of roles like that, it is a real shock to the system. And I think people either like it or they don't like it, you know, because some people, you know, understandable, say, I need to go and play another character, you know, whereas I'm kind of fine playing this one character. I mean, it does do, if I come home and I've been crying, because Fizz has been known to do quite a bit of crying over the years with the mistakes she's made in life. And when I come home and I've been crying, Chris can tell. I mean, physically, he could tell, because I'm all puffy and red-eyed, and I'm just am generally in a bit of a down mood, because it does, you know, you've been crying all day, it does kind of hit you.
Yeah.
But I don't kind of think about it when I come home, you know, or any or anything like that. But just in terms of just shattered after crying for 12 hours a day.
Draining.
Yeah, and he says, oh, no, and are you doing something funny tomorrow? I say, yeah, I'm doing something funny tomorrow. He says, all right, you'll be all right tomorrow.
Do you think you'll be doing it for years to come? I mean, you seem dead happy in Corrie, and it's obviously the programme's going to be there forever.
I know, because we've just had an email last week that it's going to be the 60th anniversary of Corrie, which obviously I knew, but it's been put in black and white this December. Mm. 60 years. Yeah, I mean, I do love it. The thing is, I mean, you never, never know. And I can't ever take it for granted because they might have other ideas one day. But for now, like, I love it. And I live in Manchester. I've got my life in Manchester and now 2 children in Manchester. I mean, it's the easiest job in the world.
Both named after, as we mentioned before, both named after iconic Corrie stars of the past, Ilda Ogden, Albert Tatlow.
Yeah.
Do you ever go back and watch those early episodes?
Oh, I love them. Oh, I am, like, I am such a massive, massive Corrie fan. It never worked out, actually, but I was supposed to be doing Celebrity Mastermind a couple of years ago, and I was going to do it on Coronation Street, the 1960s. I am a bit obsessed. Yeah, oh, I love it. And it was such an honour to know and be a friend of Tony Warren, who we sadly lost a couple of years ago. But just to have been around when, you know, knowing him and talking to him about those early days was pretty incredible. So we are lucky that gang of us that had that. I mean, his vision and his kind of voice is still there in Corrie, you know, all the producers. Yeah. Remember it always, and it's just such a special thing, and that thread that Tony kind of, because what he said was, it's just all it is peeping behind the net curtains of everybody's house and seeing what's going on behind, and it still is, you know. It might be a bit more dramatic, but life's a bit more dramatic these days maybe, and reflects the time a bit more, but it's cool, that's what it is, just peeping behind the net curtains.
And like I say, it's an honour to be part of that family tree, isn't it? You know, you were a key character in that same series that people like Pat Phoenix and Barbara Knox, Jack Howarth, Doris Speed, Violet Carson. Have you ever seen the picture? It popped up on Twitter again recently. It's Violet Carson. Violet Carson, dressed as Ina Sharples, and she's stood on a balcony of a high-rise block overlooking Salford.
Like a fire escape.
Looking out over Salford.
Yeah, oh, it's an amazing, amazing image.
What a great name for a band anyway, Violent Carson.
I like it. It is.
Maybe not. Let's move on from Fizz, because that's a massive chapter, but a lot of people obviously know about that. Let's talk about some of the other stuff that they might have forgotten about. You did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, didn't you? You did all right in that, didn't you?
Now, do you know, that's the thing that, you know, when you talk about fame, that for not very long, but I mean, talk about famous for 5 minutes, but that, well, do you know what it was as well? Because people called me Fizz all the time. So then after that, people were calling me Jenny and they know my name and they're shouting Jenny. Now, you see, the thing is, when they shout Fizz, I know immediately where I know them from, or that I don't necessarily know them, but they know me from Corrie. When they shout Jenny, I don't know, and it might be my auntie that I've not seen for years and I don't recognise. So that was a bit more difficult because I was like, oh, do I know you, or do you know me from watching me on The Jungle?
Put in there, because this is something I have, and it's a big issue, where when people come up to you enthusiastically talking to you, and it's hard to convey this to people that don't do show business stuff, but you're in that moment where they're either a fan or an old friend,
mm-hmm.
and you can't tell, which is, you can't remember if it's an old friend, or so you can't overdo the, oh yeah, how are you doing? Great to see you. You know, because it might just be a fan who's meeting you for the first time.
Yeah.
Do you get that?
Totally, but then at the same time, you don't want to be rude to your old friend, so there's a balance.
Yeah.
I do get it.
How do you do it? How do you work
well,
it?
Well, it's easier when they call me Fizz, because like I say, I know, although to be honest, probably some of my family would call me Fizz, so maybe that's not.
I try and keep it generic, like, oh, how are you doing? What are you up to?
Or you just go like, how's your... And then you just sort of click and hope that they go, Mum, yeah, how is she? And then hope that they tell you something. She's still got the bunions. Oh, has she? Oh, bless her. Give her
do you do
love.
This with Chris, where, again, my wife, Charlie, she can tell when I bump into somebody and start talking, if I can't remember their name, she'll say, hi, I'm Charlie, Clint's wife, what's your name? Does she do that for you?
Yeah, or sometimes he won't do it, and I say, I didn't introduce you because I didn't know your name. He needs to do that more. He needs to come out with your Charlie.
Do the Charlie thing.
Yeah. He does. Yeah, but then what if they say, yeah, I know I met you last week because he's as bad as me?
It does
me.
Happen. I reckon out of every 10 times that we smash it and get it right, there's a couple of times when I'll make a knob of myself. That does happen.
That's
quite a lot.
Trouble.
So celebrity, what's that?
Oh, yeah.
Was so, that a difficult experience, or did you find that the skills that you had as an actress, like patience and focus and teamship, visualisation, did all that come into to help you when you're in the jungle?
I suppose a bit of that, but I mean, the thing that I was not prepared for, because I mean, I am such a home bird, I really am, and I hadn't ever been away from Albert for, well, I'd been away from him for 3 nights, but not consecutive, as in over his whole 3 years, I'd been away 3 nights for various, like going on Lorraine Kelly, so going down to London, going to the Soap Awards, but he'd always been with Chris. He'd never been with anyone else, so we'd never both been away. So the fact that I was going to be away, so, well, it was a month, so it was a week before it and 3 weeks in the jungle. So I tried to prepare myself. I thought, I'm going to do it. Hopefully he's going to look back, he's going to be able to watch his mummy, it'll all be good, it's all positive. I'm doing it for good reasons, he's going to think I'm brave. I never thought I would miss him so much and so quickly. I mean, it was immediate. And I was kind of okay. You had to do this. We had to do this week where we were in lockdown and we had this a chaperone and we had no phones. And that was, and I was a bit scared about that. But actually, strangely, I was okay at that. I don't know. I think I'd prepared myself for that so much and that was okay. And the chaperone woman that I was with was lovely and we got on. So that was kind of okay. I treated it as a bit of a kind of, you know, what do you call it? When you go off and have a
me time.
A bit of me time. So that was okay. But then as soon as I got in the jungle, like the minute I hit there, I was just hit with this overwhelming homesickness and missing my boy. Like, and it was like a physical pain. And I was straight in that bush telegraph saying, look, I think I need to go. And they said, look, Jenny, we said that you'd miss him. Granted, we didn't think you would miss him this quickly. Like the second you got there, I hadn't even gone for a wee in the horrible dunny. I was straight there saying, I think I need to go. This is awful. I know these people are nice, but I don't want to say hello to them. I just need to go. But they persuaded me to kind of think about it. And then I had that night, and the first night was horrendous. Horrendous. I didn't sleep at all. I mean, at all. A, you're listening for bugs and things, but not really that, just because of that horrendous homesickness. And then the next day you got chatting to people and then actually found out that they'd had a really bad night's sleep too, because everyone was getting used to different things, whether they were homesick or they were just really scared of sleeping outside. And we all talked about it and said, that was really awful, wasn't it? And then day by day, I just got to know some of the most incredible people I've ever met. And we were all such a brilliant team. So when people ask me now, you know, would you do it? Should I do it? I think, I don't know, because I had such a brilliant group of people that that would never have been put together in a month of Sundays. You know, we would never have all been at the same party or the same do. But it kind of worked and was a dysfunctional family for 3 weeks, but was brilliant. And they got me through it, really. Yeah. And in the end, it was the best experience I've ever had.
And you did 3 weeks?
And I did 3 weeks, yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Brilliant. I bet it's nice to see your baby.
It was just, yeah, it was mad, really. Yeah, it was, you know, because he's three and he didn't even bat an eyelid, He'd been with daddy for 3 weeks. He'd been having an amazing time. But he spoke to me just like he'd seen me yesterday. Right. You know, there was no, he didn't have any time, so it was fine.
I mentioned at the beginning about the fact that you've opened a restaurant recently, haven't you and Chris?
Yeah. Well, 5 years we've been open, believe it or not. It's gone so fast, yeah. We're Annie's, just off St Anne's Square.
Is it called Annie's because of St Anne's Square?
Because of St Anne's Square, yeah. But also because it's a bit of an, you know, we hope it kind of sounds like someone's favourite auntie, maybe. In fact, loads of people have said, oh, my auntie, my mum was called Annie. And also, I'll tell you who we've met, loads of baby Annies. It's quite a popular name.
Is it really
now?
Right? Okay.
Yeah, it's getting up there with them. Yeah, so that's, yeah, five years.
Do you ever roll your sleeves up and muck in?
Oh, yeah.
Does this help? No, do you get
in
there?
Oh, no, I do, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not the best waitress in the world. I'm really not. So, because I have been a waitress in the past.
Where did you work?
Oh, I've done a few. I've worked in a couple of coffee shops in Bury. Oh, I worked in this Italian restaurant once and, oh, that was just awful. That was just actually, I think I did two shifts. It was in Tottington. Oh, gosh, that was just the most awful experience of
my life.
That's
a real place. For those listening around the world, Tottington is a real town.
And so is Ramsbottom.
And yeah. Todmorden.
And Todmorden, yeah. yeah, oh, that was awful. Yeah, so I'm not the best waitress, so if I'm asked to carry a plate, that means they're really desperate in Annie's. Yeah, but I mean, I like food is kind of my thing, so I do like, I like cooking. So I like getting involved in arranging menus and... But like I say, we've got such a brilliant team that we couldn't do it without. And so, you know, they kind of, they make me look like I do all these things, yeah. Like have babies and have restaurants and do curry. But actually, there's loads of people helping me with it.
It's like you say, I mean, just having a partner that can help you when you're a creative type or all the things that you're doing, theatrical type, it's important that you have somebody, especially when you've got babies. It's important we've got an understanding partner that can help you with it.
So yeah.
It's a good thing. Let's talk about Manchester. I mean, obviously, you've become an intrinsic part of the city's culture over the last couple of decades. Can we assume that you're absolutely in love with the town?
Oh, I love Manchester. I mean, first of all, I love Manchester because I've done other city breaks. And to be honest, this weather that we're having in February, I know this is going out next week, so it might be snowing by the time this actually people are listening to this. But you remember last week when it was sunny in February? Yeah. I mean, I am not ready for this. My hair, my Celtic skin is just not. So I love the Manchester rain, the Manchester weather. That is my favourite thing. In fact, going back to the jungle, one of the things that most people there hated was the fact that it rained for 3 weeks and we had the worst storms ever. Yeah. And everyone was really gutted because, you know, they'd gone to have a lovely time and be in the bikinis. I was secretly so happy that it was pissing down because I felt at home. It was the only thing that made me feel at home. But obviously I love it for more than that. I love Manchester. Yeah. I love Coronation Street. It's obviously a massive part of Manchester. Kind of a bit sad that it's not in Manchester anymore. You know, we have to go over to Media City to do it, which is...
It's a couple of miles out from where it was originally.
It's Salford. So technically it's more, we're more, although actually technically we're Trafford, but anyway, it's over the water. But Media City, the BBC bit is Salford, but we're Trafford anyway. But yeah, and it is kind of a bit sad, and those photos that I've seen of Key Street being no longer is dead sad. I hope they do something nice with that.
It's funny though, you see these important addresses and locations being levelled and all these flats going up, but it's just it's got to happen, that sort of progress. I'm gutted every time I drive past the Granada Studios. I'm looking like, I remember seeing Tony Wilson driving in there before I knew him, and I'd be like, Tony Wilson, there's Bob Greaves, and that was the studio where Joy Division did their first ever TV, and the Inspirals did this and that, and it's all been levelled, hasn't it, recently?
Right.
Or the studios have, anyway.
You're right, but like you say, things have got to move on, but you just hope that the history is remembered, and you know that whatever they do on where the cobbles were. And actually, you know, they weren't always there. I mean, the first episode, the cobbles were inside a studio. So to be honest, we can be nostalgic about something that's not, it wasn't really a thing. It was just a thing in Tony Warren's mind, and it can be anywhere. But obviously all those people walked up those cobbles for so long. Hopefully there's some kind of plaque or something. And in 50 years, 100 years, someone says that's where Coronation Street was. I hope so.
The actual art is the film, isn't it? That's the thing. The actual art is the film. Or it's like the Mona Lisa is important, but where he painted it, I don't have a clue where he painted
it.
Exactly. Can you imagine being in the space where he painted the Mona Lisa?
Wow,
that'd be quite exciting, wouldn't it? What is it about the people of Manchester, the Manchester spirit? How would you define that?
Well, it really... I mean... I really saw the Manchester spirit after the arena bomb we were talking about this before, weren't we, that we were both at the Manchester Together concert in Albert Square, which was just so brilliantly put together. And when I was approached to do it, Rose Marley was the kind of brains behind it with lots of other people, but when she got in touch and said, would I do it? And I think it sounds like the right thing to do, to celebrate. And but it was such a difficult time, wasn't it? And you thought, but I said, yeah, and everyone else was doing it. And they said, you know, you're doing it, Clint's doing it, all these amazing Manchester people are doing it. Yeah, yeah, that sounds like the right thing to do. We'll celebrate Manchester, we'll celebrate our music, we'll get our kids, there'll be choirs of kids and it'll be amazing. but I never thought how amazing it would be. Mm. I mean, it's I feel emotional thinking about it because just kind of, and I've talked about it the last few days, just randomly people have spoken to me about it. Mm. Just the amount of people that were in Albert Square that night to just be together. And I only thought about it afterwards when I saw photos and when I saw like aerial photos of how many people were in that square and beyond to celebrate what was a horrendous thing, but to celebrate the spirit of Manchester. Yeah.
It was a 1 year anniversary and it was a beautiful thing to be part of.
It was. It was indeed the 1 year anniversary.
And
of
I think
course.
We did it well and well done to Rose Marlin. She got it bang on, didn't she?
It just was. It really was bang on, yeah.
Couple more things, Jenny, before you go. If I was to say to you who your favourite humans of Manchester, past or present, who would they be?
Oh, gosh. A humans in plural. Yeah. How many people do people normally choose?
Well, Rowetta named about 30.
Oh, right. Now, we haven't got long. I've got to go back to my baby.
Three or four will do.
Okay. Well, I'll have to say my dad, who has sadly lost a couple of years ago now. So I definitely have to say my dad.
And he had an MBE. He got an MBE, didn't he?
He did.
For his work with mental health.
He was. So we were really proud that we could go there. And he was a brilliant granddad to my Albert and would have been a brilliant granddad to Hilda. So definitely him. I'm going to say, I mean, do you know what? There's so many amazing people that I should and could pick from Coronation Street, but probably, I think I'd probably have to say the late, great Tony Warren as the person who created it.
Yeah.
And under that come all the amazing women, the battle axes, the downtrodden men, all of those people, they're under that, under Tony's. Yeah. So the whole family, but definitely Tony Warren. That'll do me.
Yeah, that's great. Two people.
You don't want to miss people out, do you?
Not at all, but you've done it right there. Listen, before you go, you need to describe Manchester, Jenny, in three words.
Oh, Manchester in three words. That's so hard. I'll never leave. There we go.
Perfect. Jenny McAlpine, thank you for being a human of Excess Manchester.
Thank you.
That was Jenny McAlpine. Make sure you join us next week where I'll be speaking to Mancunian designer and illustrator Stan Chow. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We are at Humans Excess and subscribe to Humans of Excess Manchester. Rate us. Feel free to leave us a comment as well. We always like to read your comments and get your feedback. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.